Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 320, being recorded on the 24th of March, 2020. Today we have our usual suspects. The crew is all together here. We have Kendall, Cynthia, Kale, Evan, and myself, and we're here to talk about a very special topic and very special time that we're all in currently. It's related to the COVID-19 outbreak and how Microsoft may be responding to that and how Azure is playing some sort of a role in that response. So that's kind of the topic for today. But before we get there, let's just talk about some of the news in the Azure space, because the drum keeps beating as far as Azure is concerned. And we have updates that are rolling out. Nothing stopped. So I know I saw a lot of updates, actually. So who wants to go first in terms of some of the updates that have been released this week?
I'll go ahead and jump in. So this is just a reminder for everybody, right? This isn't hitting now, and I should have the note. I should have the date. Know the date off the top of my head, but I don't. But sometime in the near future, right? TLS 1.2 is being deprecated globally, right? You've started to see sites that are not supporting it, and you know Azure and Office 365 are well down that road towards not supporting it for a whole bunch of different services. So just a reminder to customers, right? You need to be checking your environment. You need to be, you know, making sure that you're doing some testing. You know, we call it scream testing, right? Disable it in your environment and see who complains and what breaks. If everything's on track, you won't have any issues, but you know, it's definitely something to just keep in the back of your mind as we're marching towards that end of life for that.
Yeah. Good one, Evan. Anybody else? I think, Kendall, you put a couple of things in there.
Yeah, I have a couple in here. So one of them is the Azure Security Center integration for AKS or Azure Kubernetes Service. So this is something that, I mean, the documentation goes back, you know, several months, because this is something that's already been, I believe, in preview. So now it's just kind of generally available. So that's something to be aware of, just the way that we're really, I guess, beefing up all of the integrations with Azure Kubernetes Service, as a lot of our customers are leveraging that today. And then there was also another one on the web application firewall integration with Azure CDN or Content Delivery Network. So there's already integration with App Gateway and Frontdoor, but this will basically allow for you to use some of your firewall policies on your Azure CDN. So just kind of extending that functionality and bringing in a new integration. And also, I actually am kind of curious, just because this was something, Sajit, you were saying, you were like, you know, we still have all these updates rolling out. Things are definitely still in motion, and I would definitely agree. But I've also heard some, too, that we're making sure that we somewhat stabilize some of the changes. I know I've seen a couple of changes come in that have either been rolled back or there's been decisions made just kind of to try to keep the stability for customers. So I think we will see updates, but I think maybe the nature of those updates might change a little bit. What are y'all's thoughts on that? That's just more of me kind of spitballing.
Yeah, one of the things that we're seeing is that we're continuing work in our usual sprints, but we've stretched the sprints the work a little bit, right? We've added on a couple of weeks maybe to a project just to give everybody a little more time. You know, obviously people have other things to worry about during this time, so everyone doesn't have the full 8 hours a day to really spend on work. Maybe you have less than 8 hours. So that's how we're accommodating for it, by stretching out our schedules a little bit in some of the projects that we're on. Anybody else?
I was going to say, and I've seen similar conversation. I don't know off the top of my head anybody that's kind of made a formal decision of we're not shipping, you know, A or B. But I think there's definitely, I have seen a number of conversations within Microsoft, you know, around, hey, is this the kind of thing that we want to ship at this point, right? Is the potential negative impact, you know, worth it? And you're just kind of going through that sanity check when they do stuff, right? Which I think is the right thing to do, right? If you can reduce some load on somebody, and you can, you know, give either our customers or our own employees, right, a little bit of extra flex, I think it's worth it.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing just to keep the balance between we want to make sure that we're still delivering what customers need as they're progressing, but at the same time, we don't want to overwhelm them with changes that maybe they don't have the infrastructure or the means to handle at this point. So I think we'll see more on that come out as this evolves.
And I think there's also a lot of effort focusing on enabling people to work from home because a lot of our customers are doing it for the same time at the scale. And that, like, the underlying Azure infrastructure that supports O365, for example, like that scaling and the infrastructure supporting Teams is scaling. So I think there's also a lot of effort put there to make sure that everyone's work from home experience can be as seamless as possible.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say I'm very impressed with the Teams team, product team, because they're really has stepped up, you know, not only because of the additional workload, but they've been rolling out changes in the middle of all this, you know, to allow people to be more productive at work. So, you know, it's a kind of a dual-edged sword, right? We have to push more changes to let people do more in this very unique time that we're in. But at the same time, we have to make sure that we don't break the system as we do that.
Yeah, I was going to say that the Teams numbers that they put out publicly in terms of the increased minutes and the increased, you know, usage, they're just massive numbers.
So let's see. I saw something in there, Evan, that you had put in there for cognitive services for the new neural text, which I thought was nice for speech. So this is part of cognitive services where you give it a text and it will, you know, it will kind of create a speech out of it. And instead of making the speech sound very robotic and all that stuff, there's an option to make it sound more natural, more fluid. You can even give it certain emotions. For example, if the text that you're trying to speak has to show certain positive emotions or maybe show empathy or cheerfulness, you can kind of set that up, and it will then deliver the speech, the speech in that particular way. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was neat. That I actually went and looked at some of this in detail because, you know, if you think about it, right, there are a couple of the ones they have is, you know, a newscast versus customer service, and those are. Like I hadn't thought about it until I looked at it, like, yeah, those are totally different speech patterns. Mm-hmm. Right. That's a cool feature.
And then something else that just came out, I think pretty recently, is that we're now using Azure Machine Learning service to have suggested replies in Outlook. So I don't know when it's gonna come out in the actual apps, but I'm on doc feed for Outlook for mobile, and I've been seeing like little suggestions of what to respond right away. And under the hood, it is using Azure Machine Learning services. It also utilizes Azure Data Lake storage to store all of the training data that we go through. And of course, like we still care very much about privacy concerns. So the Outlook team is also making sure that all the data that is used by the Azure platform is abiding to all the O365 compliance standards. And the other thing that's not necessarily Azure related that came out I thought was really interesting is that Visual Studio Code Live Share session can now be joined from the browser. I think that came out probably sometime last week. And what was before is that you can join a live session on VS Code and like co-edit and co-debug with someone else, but now you're able to do that from the browser.
That's actually pretty cool. Yeah, especially in this time where everyone's using live share, or a lot more people are using live share. That could come in handy. What else have we got there? Kale, did you have anything in there? I don't remember.
I had some stuff about the Outlook one, but there's also one. There's a new extension for VS Code out there that's called the Deploy to Azure extension, which essentially is like helping people who are building potentially like an application or something in VS Code, and then you want to kind of set up the CI/CD pipeline for that. You can essentially use this tool to easily attach to your Azure account, deploy that kind of stuff. So pretty cool productivity thing for people who are building apps and want to get them on Azure quickly. And get your pipeline set up correctly. I think it actually works with GitHub Actions as well, not just Azure DevOps. So that's kind of cool. And on the shipping front, we don't stop shipping in blockchain. So I'll be shipping something next week. So no problem there. But now our stuff, it's not quite as business critical, I would say, at this stage, like as something like Teams or something like that, where there's a much more magnifying glass on it. But yeah, we do ship monthly, so we'll continue shipping. So if you're at home, you can play with the stuff we're shipping.
Excellent. And I guess you'll let us know next week what you're shipping. It doesn't seem like you're ready to talk about it yet.
Oh, yeah, sure. No, it's more of our VS Code extension work. So, yeah, we'll talk about it next time.
All right. Sounds good. Great. What else? Anything else before we get
into it? Yeah, the other thing, just because I thought this was a really – I'm actually shocked in hindsight that this wasn't a thing before. But we've now got the ability – it's in preview now, so it hasn't GA'd yet, but the ability to use Azure Shared Disks for clustered apps, right? Like that seems the world's most natural fit, right? Because everybody has to use a shared volume, right, to negotiate who owns the resources on a cluster. And now you don't have to spin up, you know, any sort of a VM just to do that, right? You can just natively use Azure Disks to do that. And they're sitting in blob storage at that point, which really makes life a lot easier.
I see. And I think what makes it special then is that they're able to do like some sort of file locking, I suppose.
Correct.
Is that
there's a standard for that. It actually kind of depends on the different implementation, but really it's a SCSI reservation, right, which allows you to make sure that only one side can get to it and make sure that one side has a read and a write or lock mm-hmm. at that point, right? And so and you can use that on Linux. On Linux clusters, Windows clusters, right? Kind of anything that can leverage that standard way of locking those disks.
Excellent. All right. I think that's quite the roundup, right? Anything kind of top of mind that we should cover before we dive into our COVID-19 topic?
I don't think so.
All right. Okay. Yeah. So, I think Cale and Evan had this great idea to kind of cover the COVID-19 work that Microsoft is doing, and we currently just released some public statements in this regard, and it'd be a good time to talk about it now just so people are aware of what we are doing and how it impacts some of the work we're doing in Azure. So Cale, I know you're the one who started this, so what are your I'll give you the floor first just to provide your thoughts on what we're doing here.
Yeah, I mean, where I was coming at it from was kind of the work that's being done. I wouldn't even call it exactly like just all Microsoft work. It's more about like the community and how, stuff that we're doing here that maybe even we take for granted as technology people building things can start to be leveraged to help out when there's one of these pandemics or these crises that's happening quickly, right? So there's been a lot of And this stuff's all public, obviously, but like a lot of projects spinning up using the open source, community to kind of help start building these things. I think probably others can comment on this too, but I think probably the most prominent one that's getting a lot of press is the bot that was created in partnership with Microsoft to help people get information faster, right? So I think, especially in like these situations where there's a lot of uncertainty about like what's going on, or how can I take advantage of certain things that I need to kind of survive and keep going through this? This is where technology can be a big impact, right? Especially in this case, because the fibers are still lit up and we're still able to communicate over the internet. So disseminating information and making sure that information is like stable is probably like one of the most important things, right? When this happens. So there's a list of them, but I'll yield over to you guys to talk about it. But I really just kind of wanted to drive around like the ingenuity that people are using our technology stack for to help, in this case.
I would even go kind of one step lower than that, Cale. I mean, I was thinking about this as we were prepping for this show. Imagine how people would have to work, maybe call it 5 years or 10 years ago when most people had on-premises data centers. And a lot of times the only way to access those resources, right, was by people had to go put hands on things, right? And, now the ability to manage, deploy, everything for your workloads is completely remote, right? Imagine a world where that wasn't there, right? This would be a totally different experience. All these people would have to go into the office to, manage these workloads, set them up, get things rolling would just be, significantly increase the risk, right, that they would be under versus now, right, it's all kind of built through us and other cloud providers at that point. So that's really kind of, you know, gives a capability that just wouldn't have existed, right, if this hadn't become a thing.
Yeah, and I think also, like, being responsible with that, right? So, like, the fact that we can spin things up really quickly, like, we can scale really fast and do things that were impossible, like you said, Evan, 5 years ago. On the same note, like, then how do you do that responsibly so that it's not like there's bad information or, you know, someone's getting hacked, you know, these kind of things are manipulated. So certainly the secure infrastructure is one part of it, but also things like GitHub even. Most people probably know this, but like in GitHub, when you commit something up there, you know, if you want to make a change to it, it's immutable, right? Like the changes are still there from the other one. So we have a complete history that's very transparent. So if people are posting stuff there, it's easy to see that it hasn't been manipulated or something like that.
Yeah, kind of related to that, I'm curious if this has moved more people to use blockchain because of the need to see like the full history and the need to like have a distributed framework of these information.
I mean, certainly that you could see like where some of that could be beneficial, but it's not trivial, I would say, to start creating infrastructure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's trivial to spin the infrastructure up, which is kind of what we focus on, but it to one extent, but also like building a consortium, like building a group of individuals who are going to communicate and agreeing on rules. This usually takes the most amount of time of anything, right? The technology is there just to enable that thing, but it's really around like lowering that bar. And that's what we try to do with infrastructure. But yeah, there's been some comments about that. And I think it's certainly there's places where it is being used, but it's not like cure-all even in that sense, right? It's more of a enabling technology, but like I said, even things like just using GitHub and some of these other technologies can fit the bill, right?
Yeah, you know, one thing that we're seeing a lot of with our customers is they want to host workstations now in Azure. As a matter of fact, we have somebody coming to talk to us about that in the weeks to come, but it's just become so important now. You know, using either the native facilities in Azure for hosting Windows 10 VMs or using something like VMware Horizon, things like that. Those are all now suddenly, you know, we're all working on that because everybody, all these people have to have secure workstations from home. And, you know, they're not used to providing that. You know, a lot of these companies don't give everybody a laptop to take home. They're typically using workstations in the office, and now those have to be all made remote. So this is something that they are working to do.
So we've seen the same thing, like on the Global Black Belt side, a lot of Windows virtual desktop type of requests, or knowing that there's a lot of demand for that and kind of figuring out how we can help in that space. But it was funny just because I had a friend who sent me a text message yesterday and said, "Help, what's a VPN?" And I was like, yes.
I love it.
This is my time to shine. Yeah. So she is a teacher and now they're teaching remotely, right? And so she was like, "What do I need this VPN for?" She's like, "I think I know what I need it for." So I kind of went through and explained it to her until she was like, "Oh yeah, we have a Cisco system that I think probably I would need a VPN to connect to." And I was like, "Yeah, that probably makes sense." So it is really interesting the times that we're in. And there is that statement that Microsoft came out with, the commitment to customers statement, where at the bottom they said, this is certainly like not business as usual. And so I think that's just so important to call out. It's like it is to some extent, but right now there's going to be that period where a lot of people are being exposed to new approaches, to ways to work that they've never been exposed to before. And I think for us, we take for granted that this is kind of something we know has been enabled for us for a while. And so even having friends who have said, you know, our company has a zero remote work policy, and now they're kind of forced into this position. So it's almost an opportunity for them to experience some of the technology, you know, specifically with, you know, the way that Azure is working. But, you know, I thought that was really interesting because it's going to be a cultural shift too. And then I just had one more because these are all just friends that I've talked to. I have a friend who works for, I don't want to say the name of the company, but essentially what they do is they help provide support to a bunch of different charities, and they basically help dole out different financial gifts to different charitable organizations. But specifically during this time, obviously, they're focused a lot on, you know, really high need organizations or nonprofits that need funding that can then, you know, take that funding and help other people. And so they had to spin up a new website and they're using Azure. So it's, I mean, it's pretty amazing that over a weekend she needed to launch this new website and they're using Azure as that backend. And so, you know, if that capability wasn't there, how would they be able to, you know, move as quickly and as, you know, efficiently as they need to in order to be able to support this effort. So I thought that was super, super cool to hear her say that they're using Azure. And I'll get the go ahead to make sure that that's okay for me to share. But yeah, I think that was pretty neat to just see how Azure is really enabling, especially these kind of people on the front lines doing work to support all of the people that are being affected by COVID. And so, yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you look at what we've said, you know, publicly, right? You know, if you look at, and we'll include the link in the show notes, but if you look at the public statement that we released, right, what we said was, you know, we said, hey, you know, when we look at things, right, top priorities, and we say first responders, health and emergency management services, critical government infrastructure, you know, and then ensuring remote workers can stay up and running, right? Like this is, obviously every customer is important, but it's kind of been neat to see the industry as a whole, you know, step up and say, hey, but at the end of the day, life matters, right? Life takes precedence over, you know, over money, right, for this stuff. And it's just neat to see that. I think it's the same thing you're talking about, Kendall, right? Which is people are focused on, hey, I got to triage to some extent, right? I can't do everything I was doing yesterday. What's the right things? What are the critical things that I got to do, right, to make sure that everybody stays safe?
Yeah, the other thing that kind of like really has been nice, and I've seen a lot of great comments on it on the internet, Twitter, and such, was, you know, Bing actually stepping up. So if you go to, I think it's bing.com/COVID, they have like an interactive map there basically showing a lot of telemetry around, you know, the infections and where hotspots are and things like that, which is seems to be, you know, very important for people to understand, so you don't, you know, get infected and spread it to others and those kind of things. But I know the one that I've seen on TV quite a bit from John Hopkins has been really popular. They have a dashboard that's up there, but I've seen a lot of great people talking about, you know, how Bing has kind of implemented that as well. And I believe others, you know, Google and things have been building maps for that stuff. The other one that was really cool, I thought, was I think it was in Japan. To dig up the link for it, but they were using Minecraft to meet and actually have kind of school through Minecraft.
I saw that. I thought that was cool.
Yes, super, super awesome. So creative use of the technology.
Yeah, you know, the one about the bot was actually close to us. I'm in commercial software engineering, where Kale used to be, actually, and they're the ones that had a big part in creating the bot, you know, the CDC bot. This is the self-checker bot. So if you just go there, if you think you have symptoms, instead of calling in, you can just go there. And there's this kind of automated system which uses all of our bot and Lewis technologies in the background. It'll ask you a bunch of questions and walk you through whether you need to worry and call, you know, call your physician, or maybe this is something that, you know, you can just do with over-the-counter medication or something like that. It just helps reduce the number of calls that they're getting to their help desk. And now, not only the CDC has asked for it, but all the states, each state's help, the health department also has asked for the same bot. So, you know, we were able to package it up, create templates, and then quickly deploy it to the other states as required, so that they can have their own bot, because, you know, some states have their own rules and regulations, and so things are slightly different. So that's good to see that a good portion of our organization, our CSC org, is actually working on that now.
There's actually also a hackathon that's going on right now that I found that is in coordination between in.dev and Microsoft called Hackerona. We can also include that link in the show notes as well.
Interesting. I think there was a GitHub Actions one going on as well. Maybe that, I mean, I don't think that's as related because it's definitely not themed that way. But
I thought, I think a lot of people are based in Israel because I tried to join. Well, I wasn't able to join the call because the call is so early.
Wow.
But I saw the recording and it seemed pretty interesting. For people that are looking for like an outlet to use your extra energy, to make something cool out of it. Not at all that we're taking this lightly, but I think we're all trying to make the best of the situation, whatever that means for everyone, because I think everyone is taking in this information differently, and depending on how you're personally affected, this might also have a different light, because I think we're seeing more and more people that have like friends or relatives that are directly affected by it, and when it becomes that close to you, it's very different than just seeing a number on a website.
I thought it was pretty cool too, and it's not as Azure related directly, but like some of the stuff that's happening around, especially in the States, around these ventilators and how companies are transforming to kind of fit needs that need to be happened there. Like for instance, like the car companies. I thought that was really interesting because like, in some cases, like I can think of like an air conditioning system in a car and things like that. They have HEPA filters and all kinds of things in cars today, right? And retrofitting and being able to do those kind of things, and then, you know, after this clears, go back to the other business as usual. It's kind of amazing, like, to see that. I'm not sure that could happen, to Evan's point. Like, you know, you talk 5-10 years ago, trying to pull that kind of stuff off, I'm not sure that's possible. Like, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, one thing I wonder with all this remote going on, I have two kids at home. One is attending high school now, right now, classes, and my son just came down and attending classes at NYU, which is why I had to move just now.
So you got kicked out of his spot.
I got kicked out of my spot because all of I could hear a professor talking in the background. I better move. But I'm just wondering, you know, if this is, I have a feeling this is going to have a permanent impact on the way we work in the future, because as Kendall said, this has opened up a lot of people's eyes to remote working and also education, you know, being able to remote education, you know, that hasn't really been like, you know, something that has picked up in a big way. But I think now that's going to be all the more important going forward. People are going to realize that, hey, you know, it's actually quite effective, or some people might think it's not effective, but we'll see how that works out. But I think it's going to change in the way we do business, both, you know, in the business world and the education world going forward.
I actually talked to a friend that's attending business school right now, and I asked him, like, if the Zoom classrooms make it easier to multitask or harder. He said now he's actually forced to focus more because the professor sees you, everyone has to turn their camera on, and then the professor could start co-calling people, and it's even harder to know if they would co-call on you because you don't see them making eye contact anymore, like as you, if you were in a classroom.
Oh, you don't see their head
when
turn
you're in a classroom, like,
yeah.
And now they just say a name, and like you have to respond, and you're put on the spot right away. So he actually focused a lot more, which I thought was really interesting.
That is interesting.
Yeah, that's great.
Cool. Yeah, I was gonna say too, like, I think the way that we're using like a lot of these tools, some people are using for the first time, but I don't know what y'all's experience has been, but I've just seen kind of an evolution over the past, you know, week of being at home, of ways that I'm using technology that I wasn't really using it in the same way before. Like even when it comes to like Instagram live streams, so that's how I'm working out, is like my gym is doing that, or they're posting YouTube videos, or even the way that I'm I guess more intentionally using my phone, because obviously we're always around technology, but I don't think we use it as intentionally as we are now. It's like, oh, we're using a lot more FaceTime, a lot more people are calling each other again. So it's weird the way that we're kind of using some of the same tools as well, but using them in a different way. Because I think a lot more people have brought their cameras off, even on Teams. I know we've been using Teams for a while internally at Microsoft. Now we have all these other customers that are using it, but more and more people are coming off video on on Teams. And we're having like the, I don't know if y'all's Teams have started doing it, but we're doing like a virtual happy hour on Fridays where we just sit on the Teams call and we don't have any agenda, which is also kind of weird because I feel like this tool has been very scoped to being used for
like a work thing, right?
Yeah, now exactly. So it's like, it's very weird to be like, oh, this is a tool that can really provide so much value in all these different ways. And that's just kind of also a call out for those of you who are listening and don't know, Teams is currently made available to anyone that wants to use it and try it out. So highly recommend doing that if you are interested. But yeah, I don't know. I found that interesting because I think it goes along with what you said, Sajid. I think just the the impact and ramifications of the way that we're, the things that we're learning as part of this process, I think are going to stick around for a while. And I also think they'll probably solidify too, because I think this might last a little bit longer than we're hoping for. So
it's interesting to talk about that, kind of, because I was just right before the podcast, I was talking to my wife. She's got a book club that she does every month with some friends. And, you know, I said, you know, y'all ought to do it as a virtual, you know, a virtual book club, right? That you can still have it and get the, you know, the social interaction and the, you know, the friendship that they get out of it. She's like, yeah, we ought to. That should be fun. Like, I don't think they would ever think about doing that previously. And this is not, you know, it's a kind of a thing that, to your point, right, this work thing that we all said, hey, when I'm at work, I use it. But when in my personal life, I don't. Now it's kind of blending, right? Yep. You're leveraging it where you can. So, no, that's a really good point.
Did you all hear about the Netflix party extension where you can basically watch Netflix shows with all of your friends and have kind of like an ongoing Teams chat during it? Like things like that. I think it's really cool to see how technology companies are in this very privileged position to be able to bring people together and innovate, because times like this do bring a lot of innovation. So I, you know, while it's not an ideal situation by any means, I'm hoping that some of this innovation that comes out of this time will benefit the greater population long term.
I totally agree. Wow, this has been an awesome conversation, guys. Thank you for bringing all of these thoughts and, just the ideas to the table here. So we'll put all those links in the show notes that we talked about here. And we'll hopefully see all of you guys next week. I think we have a speaker lined up, so we'll talk to you next week. Thank you.
Yeah, now, Suji, can I add something before we
close out?
I was going to say, for our listeners who are listening in, please tweet at us. Let us know how you're doing. We care about y'all. We appreciate your support. I mean, we love talking to you guys and sharing all of the Azure updates, but also just let us know, like, how is this impacting you? I'd be really curious to hear from everyone, just to be able to check in, make sure everybody's doing okay, and also just hear some of your stories about how, you know, your ways of working are changing or some techniques that mm-hmm. you think are working well for you. I think that'd be cool
good
to
call.
See.
Good call. Good call. Yes, please tweet the Azure podcast. All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.